She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. This show today is sponsored by Chapman Tucson, and we appreciate their support to make this national broadcast possible. An incredibly interesting show and guest planned for today. It's a topic that's a first for us. Our guest is Kate Lewis, who is from the USDA BioPreferred program. And let me just share with you that the goal of the program is to increase the purchase and use of bio-based products through two initiatives. Kate will be giving us details about all of this during the next hour. I have to say, from where I sit, it's fascinating. I'm sure you will want to stay here with me. And Kate and I spoke very briefly before we got on the air. It's a heady subject in some ways, and Kate promises to make it, for the mainstream person, it's really important, and she's going to tell us about it in what I call plain English for the mainstream Americans like me. I just have another quick announcement. Please remember to join me every Saturday live at noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. And I'd like to remind you that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. If I do a pre-record, I frequently do that because I'm always checking in on myself. And all of the podcasts from the shows live on my website right there for your listening pleasure, www.MrsGreensWorld.com. And of course, I couldn't do a show without a reminder to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. If you have questions, email me, info@MrsGreensWorld.com. So, Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, Gina, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure to be here and talk to your listeners.
I think we have to go to a little bit of a, like, kind of set the stage, because there are a couple of pieces that put this in perspective. It's a program that was really initiated and reauthorized in some of the most recent farm bills. And the information that I have said 2000 and 2008, but we just had another reauthorization, so maybe you even have up-to-the-minute news on that. But tell us about what the goal is of this program and what the two initiatives are. I think that's a good way to set the stage.
Sure. Well, as you said, I work at the USDA. That's the Department of Agriculture. And I work on an innovative public-private partnership, which sounds better than government program.
It does. I love to use that term. Public-private partnerships, I think, are the answer to a lot of our country's challenges.
And the overall goal of this this partnership or this program is to help spur the development, manufacture, and purchasing of goods and materials known as bio-based products or bioproducts. And you are right. We get our legislative authority, or, you know, the authority to run and implement this initiative comes from a piece of ag legislation, agricultural legislation called the Farm Bill. And the program that I work on is called BioPreferred. It's biopreferred.gov, by the way. And it was started in 2002. So the initiative is 10 years old, and it was initially started, as I said, in the 2002 Farm Bill as a way to use the federal government spend, or the amount of money that the federal agencies spend as a sector, to help increase, as I said, the development, purchase, and use of bio-based products. And it was reauthorized, the program, in 2008. And we're actually still waiting for a reauthorization again for the 2012 Farm Bill. The Senate, I know this isn't a show about policy, but the 2002 Farm Bill has not yet been reauthorized, but we're hoping it will be soonest, because that allows us to continue the implementation of this really unique program idea.
And it's interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, it's more than a program idea. We're trying to, by implementing this program, really put this policy of having the United States invest in and to the market transformation of bioproducts. And it's something that we're trying to do every day. And as we talk more, I'm sure I'll be able to give you some more specific examples.
And the Farm Bill, of course, is a huge, great debate in all of the periodicals and advocacy groups that I participate in. So it's very much a hot topic. And I always encourage listeners, you heard my tagline, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. So if you can spend a little time Googling, which is the easiest way to do it, researching what's going on with the Farm Bill, and decide what you think about it, and maybe decide to get involved in one way or the other to get what I would consider some more healthy components added or strengthened. Kate, tell us basically, give us the definition of what a bio-based product is, what does bio-based mean?
You know, Gina, there's no dictionary definition of what a bio-based product means. And back in 2002, our Secretary of Agriculture knew that our agency would be the lead implementer for this program, and we had to, you know, for the stakeholders that we work with, the manufacturers and industry members and consumers, we'd have to put forth a definition of what a bio-based product is. And even today, probably most of your listeners, very few consumers, even the most discerning ones, really know what a bio-based product is. And that's, answering and addressing that the barrier of education through outreach and awareness, like Mrs. Green's World, is why we do this. But a bio-based product or a bioproduct, sometimes you see it all as one word, bio-based.
Right.
Sometimes a listener may see it as bio-based. It's the same thing. It is just simply, as defined by our agency, the Department of Agriculture, it is a product made either in whole or in substantial part of renewable agriculturally based material. It's a product that is made from a renewable ag material, such as a plant-based material or a forestry-based material or marine-based materials. Like, so plant would be, you know, the ingredients coming from soy and corn, forestry ingredients coming from biomass, you know, waste.
Okay.
And marine-based, that could be, it's also called aquaculture.
Okay.
And those could be marine, like algae, or they could be fish-based. Those are some more specific examples of what those specific feedstocks or ingredients are.
So it's definitely, the purpose is to manufacture cleaner, healthier plant, marine, or forest-based products, because one of the things I noticed when I did the research, bio-based products don't include any of our fossil fuels like coal, petroleum, motor vehicle fuels, heating oil, those kinds of things, most commonly used as a renewable energy source, but not renewable.
Right, right. And I think we need to be careful. We're getting into product development and the chemistries of the product, but you're generally correct. The benefits of a bio-based product are threefold. Putting it in big context, and if you don't look at it product by product, in aggregate, the more that our country can tap into the resources associated with rural communities and develop the jobs that go with them, the better. These ag-based materials are most often sourced from the United States in rural areas. You know, we grow a lot of things in our country. And so there's a benefit of developing this industry because of the related benefit that it brings back to these rural communities and the jobs that go with them. And it keeps these commodities that we're growing, plant-based, soy-based, or tapping into from some of our resources, it keeps those valuable. The second benefit of a bio-based product is, and you hit on this, Gina, a lot of these products, and I mentioned the general definition of a bio-based product, but I didn't really give a lot of examples. It's these products, there's about 25,000 of these products that are being manufactured right now. And so it's not a large market. 25,000 individual
items. In the big
items.
Scheme of things, right.
It's not large.
It sounds like a lot, but it isn't.
No, and what's really unique about these products is that they are quite varied. These are products that are construction products, that could be applicable for home construction or commercial construction. So these are things like roof coatings and water tank coatings and composite panels and interior paints and coatings. And I mentioned a couple of specific products there that have applicability either for general consumers or in the commercial sector. There's a lot of industrial type products, lubricants and fluids like engine oils and gear lubricants and greases and things like that that we see used in more fleet, you know, with vehicles and motor pools and industrial factories and things like that. A lot of cleaners, janitorial products like bathroom cleaners and general purpose cleaners, dishwashing products and furniture cleaners and laundry products. And here's where these types of products are starting to become more consumer targeted and consumer focused. There's a lot of bio-based cleaning products. And then a third category would be food service, disposable cutlery and tableware and things like that. These are throwaway products that are kind of used once by a consumer and on a picnic, you know, and then tossed away. And then probably the newest sort of development of bio-based product is in the personal care sphere. A lot of baby products and ointments and conditioners and hand soaps and cleaners and getting into some of the makeup products and things like that. So you can see the only commonality between these types of products is that a certain amount of the ingredients are coming from an agricultural resource. It doesn't mean that all of the petroleum, and in most cases, when they're coming from an agricultural resource, these ingredients, they're displacing or they're not using the conventional ingredient, which was formerly used, which was petroleum.
Which was
or oil.
Just about everything, right?
In everything.
This is a petroleum byproduct. That was quite common. You're absolutely
right. Exactly. And so that's the other benefit of increasing awareness about these products and ultimately working with industry and buyers to spur the purchase and use of them is because these manufacturers are in most cases, not all, but they're removing the petroleum-derived resources. They're taking them out and they're substituting those same type of ingredients, but they're made from a more rapidly renewable agricultural ingredient. So there's a benefit here in terms of our U.S. energy security, because we are better off as a nation if we start to limit the amount of oil that we source from countries that don't like us very much.
And I think that people think about it when it comes to their cars, but if they are exposed to the massive amount of products in which petroleum byproducts are included, it brings it closer to home and more real. You don't have to buy a new car, but you can start looking about where the products you're buying for everyday use are consumed. Let me ask you this, Kate. The federal procurement preference, I know, is huge, especially for major corporations, to give a little bit of a point even, or a half a point, or a percentage point preference in the federal procurement process is significant. What was the ultimate impetus? How did this get started? And you know where I'm going with this. Did consumer groups start saying, we've got to include more bio-based programs? Did the government say, we have to protect the citizens more? There are hidden dangers in some of these. We have to, you know, like you said, national security, bring it down to that level. I want to know a little bit more about the genesis. That's the kind of thing that I get obsessed about. So who started this? It's such a great program. And like, where did it get started? It's not that old.
Well, you know, that's a tough question, Gina, and one that predates my arrival here at the Department of Agriculture. I've only been here for 3 years. I came over from a different agency, but I can give you my perspective on the genesis. You know, the statutory authority is the Farm Bill, and I really appreciate you you mentioning to the listeners, hey, Google the Farm Bill and get an understanding of what this piece of policy is. I will tell you, before I came here, and I was working on a different initiative in a different federal agency, but one that was focused on the environment and efficiency and energy, I had no idea how vast the Farm Bill was. And it is the primary agricultural and food policy legislation of our government. And we, our little program is just one tiny little piece of it. This bill, or this law, it's revised every couple of years, and it affects so much.
It's massive. I mean, it's far-reaching and massive. You are so right.
And so there's that aspect of it. I think the policy and the implementation of the preferred federal procurement, again, this is my perspective because I wasn't here in 2002 and I didn't work on the earliest years of the program's implementation. But I will say that the federal government as a sector has become very serious in the past couple of years, like large corporations globally, about what is the environmental impact of their business. And so it is not uncommon now to have large enterprises, companies here in the U.S. and abroad, as well as the federal government in its various civilian agencies and Department of Defense. All of these enterprises now have strategies. These are sustainable plans, sustainability plans that look at mitigating certain environmental issues associated with doing what they do. And so I think the federal government has understood that as a sector, they're a sector of the economy, and they take in money and they produce services. And so they, like other enterprises, have been interested in doing whatever they can do to minimize their, as I said, environmental footprint or their carbon footprint, their energy use. And they're looking at things, everything from the agency I work on to large agencies like the Department of Defense are looking at ways to streamline and make their operations more sustainable. And back in 2002, 2003, 2005, the regulatory piece or part of the U.S. government basically outlined a policy which ultimately was turned into a procurement law, a purchasing law, where agencies had to give purchasing preference to bio-based products. So let's say, I work for the Department of Agriculture. Well, the U.S. Forest Service has a presence in a lot of states, especially in the western part of the United States.
Right.
Well, the U.S. Forest Service operates, I'm sure they have a lot of vehicles, they have a lot of trucks, and so the Forest Service puts out a procurement or an acquisition to get those trucks, to purchase them, and then they have to find a way to service them and things like that. And so what this purchasing preference or this federal procurement preference means is that those personnel have to be aware of the bio-based product substitutions and use those in servicing their vehicles. And again, I think it's a very incremental action, what I'm talking about right now,
right,
that happens, that hopefully the government is trying to spur these incremental actions or these transactions thousands of fold. And then, if that happens thousands of fold throughout all of the operations of the federal sector, the combined benefit could be quite large.
And that's what we're looking for, the ripple effect, so that
it
happens in lots of sectors all at once, and we're taking one step forward. I like that it's a voluntary certification and labeling program. I'm the ultimate believer that the consumer, if we only knew it, we've got the power because the consumer does. You can blame the lobbying groups and blah, 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 but the consumer does it. So you can see examples every day where a group will lead the consumer to get ignited into action and make some changes. So when we come back from the break, I'd love to talk a little bit more about that, Kate, because I want consumers that are listening to be able to understand there's a labeling process and to really know what they're talking about. And the other thing I liked is that you're making it cost effective to the end user. There are so many things about this. I don't even know how I found out about it, but I asked Kelly to get you on the show. I was reading something and I thought, this fascinates me. So we are going to take a short break. We are interviewing Kate Lewis from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and she is talking about the Bio Preferred program. You can find her website at, where did I find your website, Kate? I have it everywhere. USDA what is it? Oh, biopreferred.gov, www.biopreferred.gov. And when we come back, I'd like to talk more about the certification and labeling, the product eligibility and some of the products. Like, I saw the big list and I want to ask you why bedding, bed linens and towels are on it. That was very fascinating to me. So great things for the environment, great things for human health effects, and a lot of content rich information. Please stay here with me. We'll be back with Kate Lewis from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Preferred BioPreferred program. Stay here with me.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Are you thinking about swapping out your old items for new? Think Habitat when you do. Don't trash it. Have a store it. Habitat for Humanity Tucson will resell your donated furniture, appliances, and building supplies and use the proceeds to build affordable homes in the greater Tucson area. Call now at 520-889-7200 for a free pickup. You can bring your donations to Habitat's Have a Store at 935 West Grant Road, just a quarter mile east of I-10. For more information, go to habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we are certainly giving you lots to think about today. Our guest is Kate Lewis. She is from the United States Department of Agriculture BioPreferred program. Hopefully, you are joining me in learning so much about the importance of this program for us as consumers. And Kate, thanks for being with us. I just have to do a short shout out for one of our sponsors, because this is all made possible through the support of our many wonderful sponsors. We have a great new partner from the East Coast who does care about our health. The name of their company is EcoBella with two C's, EcoBella. And I encourage you to visit their website at www.ecobella.com, or if you're a Facebook person, check them out on their Facebook page. And remember that our tagline is, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And it really includes all of the things that you're putting on your body that might contain harmful chemicals, things that you really don't want to be putting in your body. You don't have to worry about it with Ecobella. After having had the Queen of Green, Deborah Lynn Dadd, on the show recently, I'm more committed than ever to this international company that engages in the highest level of business practices in their sourcing and in their ingredients and how they operate as a company. Again, check them out at ecobella.com. And I'd, of course, always love to know what you think. So welcome back, Kate. Thanks for being with us to share with us information about this fascinating, albeit a tiny bit complicated, I might say that might be an understatement, but you're making it understandable. So the Bio Preferred Program lives in the Farm Bill, and it's evolving. And let's talk a little bit about the voluntary certification and labeling program, because I think that's so important. Consumers rule if they only knew it.
Thanks, Gina. Yeah, as we talk about program evolving, as I mentioned, the program got its start in 2002, and it contains two parts. We talked a little bit about the federal procurement preference part of BioPreferred. The voluntary bio-based product certification and labeling initiative is the latest evolution in the program. It started 18 months ago. I was brought over here to USDA to finalize the strategy for bioproduct certification and labeling and then run the initiative. And that takes up the biggest part
Huge.
Of my time here at USDA.
That's a big job.
It's very fulfilling, and it does. It keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, right.
And as I said, we started this in the spring of 2011. So we're 18 months into it. And really, we view here at USDA the introduction of a product label as a tool. This part of the program, you know, the voluntary certification
right.
and labeling, is the consumer-facing part. We talked about kind of the policy of having the federal government and the agencies use these products, and there's a lot of follow-up and implementation that goes on with that. You have to adjust contracts and talk to manufacturers and vendors and talk to agencies, and all of that activity continues. But now we have launched an initiative that makes it possible for the manufacturers of these products, whether they're working with us on the federal initiative or not, they can now go through a product certification protocol. They can have their product, whether it is, as I mentioned, these products are quite diverse.
Quite diverse.
Whether it is a lubricant for a large piece of machinery, or it, in Ecobella's case, whether it might be a personal care product. And I just happened to mention them because I know a little bit about them, and you mentioned that they were your sponsor. We're not actively working with them at this point. It was just a nice way to draw the connection.
It is, and they're a great company. So I do a shout-out each show for them as part of their sponsorship, and they are pretty pure.
So it's possible for them, or really any manufacturer or brand owner of a bio-based product, to have the product tested, have the product's bio-based content tested. Now, how is that done? It's a standard test method that is international, and it's been agreed upon, consensus-based and agreed upon by standards providers. And manufacturers who are interested in earning our seal and being able to use the label mark show us evidence of their bio-based product being tested. And we afford them we give them the right to use the label on their product or their packaging. I should actually say that the bioproducts, one of the types I didn't mention, was packaging. And there's quite a few manufacturers or brand owners that are starting to integrate bio-based and or biodegradable materials into their packaging. So we have certified several hundred products. In the past 18 months, we've certified about 800 products. Again, they're very diverse. Some of the products that we've certified are packaging products.
Which is really music to my ears. I mean, I just put a post up the other day about waste, you know, away, there is no more away. So anything that's bio or phytodegradable just helps. It helps for the greater good.
Yeah, most bio-based products are also biodegradable. The better term of art would really be compostable.
Yes.
Because that's a standard that's defined by a test method. But all biodegradable or compostable products aren't necessarily bio-based. So that's a topic from another show to really educate on that comprehensively. It has been an evolution, and it's been very tricky introducing a product label to consumers. I'm sure your viewers know this because they're among the thinking. It's not a new concept to identify certain aspects of the product through a label. And in fact, you know, we're 20 years into, you know, product labeling efforts on a wide variety of attributes. But identifying a bio-based product on its bio-based attribute is completely new. And so it's been fulfilling, interesting, and we're, you know, trying to do some good here through our USDA-certified bio-based product initiative.
Kate, it got me really excited, and I'm not kidding. It's like, okay, here's a new one, because we did it for food labels, and there are a lot of, more and more, there are companies that are putting out the genetic modification, putting that as a separate part of the label. Now, in terms of the label itself, easy to understand is one of the things that it says on the website. Transparent by way of percent bio-based content, I get that. In terms of cost effectiveness, one of the biggest challenges to me that I think manufacturers face, even if they are committed to the highest level of sustainability, consumers who want to eat healthier, there's always the cost factor. To eat all organic right now still costs a lot more money. So when you say the cost effective to the end user, is that something that you want them to know, that it's affordable, or is it something that you work with the manufacturer? Is this like the perfect marriage or the perfect storm?
Great question. I think, Gina, it's all about scalability. You know, we've identified, as I said earlier in the show, there's about 25,000 bio-based products that are being manufactured right now and available either for commercial use or consumer use. Some of these products are, you know, the buyer is going to pay more.
Right.
For others, they're not. It just depends on the scale to which that particular product's being manufactured. You won't pay more for, you know, a Coca-Cola beverage served in a plant bottle than a Coca-Cola beverage served in their traditional PET
right.
bottle.
Because one thing Coca-Cola has, it's scale.
Right. Is a buyer who's working on motor pool operations and just making sure that their fleet of cars and trucks is well taken care of, are they going to pay more for, you know, a multi-purpose grease that's bio-based versus a conventional grease? They might, because that market for that type of product is much smaller. But what's interesting and what we've really tried to capture and shine a light on is sort of the total cost of ownership. And there have been numerous success stories and case studies and kind of business white papers about sourcing a bio-based product, like let's just continue to go down the road on a grease, a lubricant for a piece of machinery. There have been companies companies are very sophisticated, and it's a risk to get them to switch, just like consumers. I mean, we have brand preferences and product loyalties, and it's a risk to get us. I'll just put us consumers
totally.
And commercial
buyers. Totally. I
couldn't
agree with you more. It's like, why are you going to even make me consider switching?
Yeah, because those loyalties have been ingrained, and in some cases for years or decades. Well, we have... as I said, case studies and business documents that support, let's say a company owns a very large piece of a manufacturing equipment, and that runs 24/7, three shifts, and they need to make sure that it's well lubricated and well greased. Well, they want to try a different grease. The value of that piece of equipment is huge, and then its role in their manufacturing process. Bottom line, what has been really interesting to see as this industry for bioproducts has developed is manufacturers and buyers focused on the total cost of ownership, and that in some cases you could pay a little bit of a premium, let's say 10% of the price, But what they're starting to see is it prolongs the life of the equipment, that the bio-based product prolongs the life of the equipment, or the equipment actually runs cooler, and that has associated effects on what this piece of equipment makes. So I think it's a really tricky proposition to look at pricing of these products. In some cases, a consumer or a buyer will pay more. In other cases, they won't. And, you know, when you look at what the benefits the product is providing to you, you know, you just make a choice. You think, and as you advocate your listeners to do, and you say, is this something I'm willing to invest in? If not, you know, that's fine. But if it is, and we're working with the manufacturers to make sure that the product's benefits, while it may be bio-based, that the standard and traditional benefits of the product are still there. The product has to work, and it has to perform, and that is just a mandatory no matter who you are, if you're a buyer or a consumer.
You know, I can give you an example that's it's kind of a sidebar, but kind of not, and certainly speaks to what you say about the value, looking at the entire picture, the whole life of the product. We have a Clean Cities Coalition here in Tucson that's very active, and one of the large fleets in Tucson, they actually deliver Budweiser to all over the state. They have the franchise for all of the state except the Phoenix area. They switched to compressed natural gas for their vehicles. And the segue for me is that at the report that they gave at the last meeting is it was expensive to do the initial investment. They partnered with Ryder. But what was so noteworthy to me is that the man representing Golden Eagle said the breakdowns are far less, the efficiencies are far more, our drivers love them. So there is that cost factor. They have far fewer days off the road with broken vehicles. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the beer delivery truck, you know, industry, that's what you have to look at. So it's hard sometimes or challenging to get enough of the consumer's attention to say you have to look at a little bit more than just the price for your own sake, not for the person that's trying to sell it to you. There can be a very cost-effective impact to the end user. So thank you for using that example. I think it's really important.
Well, thanks for articulating it just with a different type of product, as in compressed natural gas. But, you know, I have a lot of sensitivity to this issue, particularly for consumers, because we all of us, don't want to pay any more for something, especially a commodity product like we buy all the time, than we need to or than we have to. And particularly in this economy, it's very difficult, and there's a lot of choices that consumers have in terms of consumer products. And a consumer goes to the store and votes with our wallet,
totally,
with our pocketbook.
Totally.
But regardless of whatever aspect or attribute a consumer decides to adopt, the one commonality associated with products that are highlighted for specific reasons, which is great. I'm all in favor for bringing more information to the consumer, but the product at its core has to work, and it has to deliver the experience to the consumer, regardless of whether it's being promoted as recyclable or energy efficient or bio-based. It's got to perform, because, you know, that can't be taken away in an attempt to, you know, highlight a different attribute of it.
And I can't, I mean, I'm laughing here because I can't agree with you more. If you buy, you know, like I, on my journey of Mrs. Green, we've tried different products. And if you get some dish soap, and I know now the bubbles are fake, that's a false sense of clean. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have bubbles. But if they're not doing the job and they're a green product, they're not staying around Mrs. Green's house. So we have had to really evolve and find what is green and sustainable and also works. It's annoying, and you don't really want to be annoyed. You don't want to buy this great deodorant that's clean, green, fresh, great for the environment, and 10 minutes out the door, someone is saying, oh, did someone not use deodorant today? I mean, it's that simple.
It doesn't work.
It's got to do.
Nothing will turn off a consumer faster.
That's right. It's like,
okay.
I love that green thing. So I think when we come back, we should talk about there are some products. This is not something that we, for the what I call the rabid consumer, the highly informed I use dark green in the dark medium and light green in my writing, but it's someone corrected me and said the bright green. Let's talk about some of the things that don't have to be included or that are looking for the label because they're already considered as bio-based products. Because I think that's important too, that a consumer doesn't get confused and say, well, I'm not going to buy that because it doesn't have the label on it. So we will be right back. We're going to take a short break. I'm loving this conversation with Kate Lewis from the U.S. Department of Agriculture BioPreferred program. She's giving us an overview on this very new program. And we'll talk a little bit more in this next segment about what you don't have to worry about and some of the other products that are included. Please stay here with me. Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best-in-class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand-new, sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With five ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if this show isn't making you think, I am honestly scratching my head because it's certainly making me think. A delightful guest, informative guest, Kate Lewis from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's BioPreferred program. And I'll just repeat, if it's okay, Kate, the goal of this program is to increase the purchase and use of bio-based products through two initiatives. We've talked a little bit about both of them, the procurement preference by federal agencies and their contractors, and then the voluntary certification and labeling for consumer marketing so that we know what we're buying. Kate, there's every once in a while I ask like five questions in a row, and I want to try to not do that, but I want to make sure that we give the shout out for your website again, because I think people sometimes when they're listening on their computer, they can listen to me and put it on. So it's www.biopreferred.gov. That's the website. And then let's talk a little bit about there's definitely reasons why they have to document supports about the claims about the environment and human health effects, life cycle costs, sustainability benefits, and the performance of the product. You mentioned about those. Those are our requirements to be considered. So Let's talk about the certification process. I always like to know who does this, who sits down and looks at the information that is presented to you and gives it the yay or nay. Is it all scientific formula? Since it's new, I would think it's constantly evolving. What's the inside scoop on how the product certification process works?
That is a really interesting question. And in 18 months of managing the certification protocol, I've not been asked that question. So snaps to you, Gina.
That's great. I always like to ask that one question that nobody asked.
You know, we've designed the certification process or protocol, I think, to be a nice mix between efficiency and credibility. So a manufacturer who makes a bio-based product who's interested in having our program certify it, again, that's so that the product or the package can bear the seal or the label. They advance an application. They start an application through our website, which is biopreferred.gov. You've mentioned that. Thank you. And then what is, we think, really efficient about the application process specifically, and this doesn't impact consumers, it's more for the manufacturers,
right.
It's almost paperless. There's no mailing, it's all done online, this
right.
is kind of conventional IT. So data moves from USDA to our contracted partners through the laboratories where the products have to be tested at. This data all flows behind the scenes through our application protocol. But quite simply, a manufacturer opens an application on our website, makes contact with us, and it's real people. It's USDA as well as some contracted service providers that look at each application that comes through, and we preliminarily qualify it, and then it moves to the next stage, and the manufacturer has to discuss, have a conversation with our contracted certifier, and then the certifier provides the applicant with some practices and details about having the product tested and how to sample the product so that all the products that are submitted for certification are sampled at a laboratory the exact same way. The testing results flow back from the lab through our contracted certifier, and then the certifier communicates back with USDA, and we communicate with the manufacturer and give them a thumbs up or thumbs down on whether their product qualifies and has been accepted.
And so I can understand why a lot of the large manufacturers would want this seal of approval, just simply because of the U.S. the preference. I don't have any problem with that at all, the procurement preference. Are there more, what are you seeing trending in the 18 months that you've been there in terms of, I believe there are companies that just are moving faster ahead for the greater good as well. The consumers demanding it in part, but there are companies that are finding their conscience. What do you see trending, Kate, in terms of who's applying for the label?
You know, we have set up a protocol or a process where I get reports on activity every month. And these reports aren't as sophisticated as I'd like them to be, but they at least allow me to show at this point in the effort what you've asked about, who's applying, from what industries. We see a lot of interest on behalf of the companies that make food service products, tableware and cutlery.
Interesting.
Because I think that these are disposable. Or if the manufacturer chooses to secure an additional certification and compost, these are kind of throwaway products. So why not try and make them as efficiently and with as little associated implication or waste as possible? So a lot of food service products that are made up of really unique, interesting ingredients, agricultural ingredients like potato starch and corn-based resin.
It's fascinating. When you pick them up, I can always say, oh, this is made out of corn. I know.
And a lot of these bio-based materials, Gina, a lot of them are what we call biomass, which are kind of waste materials.
Right.
I talked with a gentleman in the university this morning. Actually, can I give a little promo to the university? Because they're really interested, and they're as a university, they're a nonprofit. But this kind of keeps it alive. For
and
your,
I might want to have them on the show.
Oh,
so go ahead.
Very possibly. But this kind of is a specific example of the investments that a number of different entities are making in trying to advance this bioeconomy. But there's a company that is using the hulls of soybeans, okay?
Oh,
soy hulls, which is pretty much a waste product, and they're combining them into something called a composite. And then they're forming this composite into like a waste receptacle, a trash can. And so they're making, instead of a trash can made from conventional petroleum, they're making it out of these waste agricultural materials. And so that's kind of a, you know, an example, like a living in action example.
Yes.
But so we see this type of innovative thinking in a number of industries, but definitely the leading products that we've certified in the past 18 months, a lot of cleaning products. And I think that has to do with the chemistries associated with combining these ingredients and the formulations make it easy to, it's easier to provide a product that performs and using some alternative chemistries that are focused on bio-based. So a lot of cleaning products, a lot of chemicals that we call intermediate chemicals, like these composites I mentioned for the trash can. These are not consumer-facing products. These are upstream chemicals that companies, large and small, make, and then they sell downstream to other companies. Those applications for those types of products have been quite active. And as I mentioned, a lot of food service products. And I think packaging, consumers' association with packaging is very interesting, and there's a long history there. And so I think that is, particularly with some of the developments in bio-based plastics or bioplastics that are being made from a number of different types of materials, I think that you're likely to see some big changes in how we package the things that we, you know, purchase and buy and eat moving forward.
And it matters so much. And do you want to give a shout out to the university that you're working with? Because you never mentioned them.
Yeah, I met with a gentleman who oversees something called OBIC, the Ohio Bioproducts Innovation Center at Ohio State University. And I mean, any of your listeners could Google Ohio Bioproducts Innovation Center or OBIC and find a link to the number of different initiatives that they're invested in. But it's very exciting when you're not just talking about companies themselves, you're talking about companies sometimes in urban areas, sometimes in rural areas, partnering with universities who are getting grants from states or the federal government, or you've got federal efforts and policies like this one at BioPreferred, that we're all trying to combine our resources to really make some meaningful changes in products that are manufactured. And what's most interesting, Gina, is before the Industrial Revolution, this was sort of the standard way of manufacturing. There were like whale blubber, and there were many early products that were made of these types of materials that ultimately were just displaced when we found a way to pump oil out of the soil cheaply and move it around.
I know, and just a really wacky example that I love to give. Last Christmas, my daughter gave us a soda stream. We drink a lot of club soda, and it's because I'm Mrs. Green, but club soda, we were buying 6-pack cans, which have little plastic pieces connecting them, and I'm sure they come in some type of cardboard packaging that may be wrapped with plastic or whatever. So I was doing the math the other day with my husband, and think about the waste that we have cut down on by just getting a soda stream. It's just water and the little cartridges, and the cartridges, you take them back and they get refilled. You know, 5 years ago, I didn't give a thought. We just go and buy cases of club soda. But we eliminate the transportation and the packaging and the recycling of the aluminum cans. And this machine costs $100. I mean, it's such a part of being a conscious consumer. But Kate, I have to ask you this, because I did have Deborah Lindad on my show a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, it blew me away. And it's hard these days, I think, to like stump Mrs. Green. I have to know a little bit about something in the green world or in sustainability, because I read so much. But she was talking about bedding and bed linens and towels. And what she said, that just like I did a big gulp on the radio, is that most sheets that are iron, you know, that you don't have to iron, have formaldehyde in them. So does this show up anywhere on an ingredient you're looking to not have in something that you would give a label to, or are the two subjects not related, which is perfectly okay? Because that's on your list in round one. The first thing is bedding, bed linens, and towels. So what are you trying to make sure is included in them? Maybe that's a better question.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say the two issues are unrelated. You know, this could go in a lot of different directions, and I just want to be sure that I'm explaining this wholly and yet as simply as possible. This brings up another issue for our program that might be interesting to consumers. There are bio-based, quote-unquote bio-based products that are on the market, that are out there, that have been manufactured for decades, that will never get a certification or label from our agency. And a good example is like 100% cotton sheets.
Okay.
We will not certify and label 100% cotton, because it is what we define as a mature market product.
Okay.
So it's existed prior to 1972, when the multiple entities came together, multiple factors came together, and it signaled sort of a price war in terms of oil. Bottom line is that there are. We don't feel like it's on strategy and really fits the mission of this program to certify and label like 100% cotton t-shirt or wood-based furniture. Are those materials and items bio-based? Yes, they are. They're not eligible for our certification because they don't represent, since 1972, like a new or innovative technology.
Right.
Okay, but so... That's not to say we have certified products that are in kind of the bed linen, linen category, but it's normally a combination of cotton with another ingredient like eucalyptus or the woven bamboo and things like that. So, to answer your initial question with that context, you know, USDA is primarily looking at one attribute of these products, and it's the amount of bio-based content that the product contains. It doesn't mean we don't look at the other attributes or other aspects of the product, but we're awarding the certification primarily on the amount of bio-based that the material has been tested to contain, and then that amount is listed on the label as a percentage.
Great. I really get it. And I think that we should mention too, and I'm thrilled about this, that you are going to be on our show again in October to talk about a specific project you're working on with a major brand. So there will be time for some return interview questions, and I think you're already scheduled, and I'm thrilled because we certainly do well going back and forth together. What are some of your closing thoughts? I would love to see your answer be yes, what you see is trending upward, that you're getting more applications. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are more people getting on board? Are you going to have to add more staff to your little program within the USDA? What do you see in the crystal ball for Kate Lewis and the USDA Bio Preferred program?
We've had a steady amount of applications.
Steady is
for
good.
For bioproduct certification come through in the past 18 months. They've been steady. Which is good because it's very difficult for a federal bureaucracy to be very nimble and add staff quickly.
Right, especially in an election year.
Exactly.
With not happening.
But we pride ourselves, again, that the certification has been set up to be a nice mixture of efficiency and credibility. We have a small staff here, but it's very personal. We do return calls, people email. There's a number of communications mediums, you know, whether consumers or manufacturers can use to contact us. And rest assured, there is a person on the other end of the phone or the email that comes in through our website. You know, I see an opportunity, Gina, for a lot of growth in this area, and I feel it's my responsibility that I take very seriously to manage the growth and the marketing of these products in the most responsible way possible. So I'm not going to tell your viewers what to buy.
Right.
I'm just going to tell them to consider bio-based and to look for the label. You know, 18 months into the certification, because it's only been around since the spring of 2011, we are just now starting to see products on shelves at retail. Okay, given the variety of bio-based products, you could go into a convenience store and see packaging with
Kate,
the bio-based label.
We got it. You've got to hold that thought. And I'm sorry I have to cut you off because we have about 30 seconds. I want to tell people again who you are, Kate Lewis from the USDA Bio Preferred Program. You are a great guest. Cannot wait to have you back. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Next week, great show on faith-based organizations and the environment. Make it a great green week.